So I was looking around for what I wanted to talk about, and I read Rabbi Sacks on Aish, and he had a paragraph that jerked me up short and gave me what I'm going to talk about. The name of his article, by the way, is The Morality of Love. And what he's talking about there is Deuteronomy is the book of love. The root word for love, ahav, aleph, hey, vav, appears twice in Exodus, twice in Leviticus, zero times in Numbers, and 23 times in Deuteronomy. The whole book of Deuteronomy is God's love story to us and to Israel. Now, people don't often see that, but the beginning of today's Torah portion, God talks about the covenant of love that he has for Israel. And of course, that gets extended to all humanity in both the prophets and in the New Testament. So the thing that jerked me up is last week I was talking about the conflict between liberalism and Christianity. What I said then, and I'll repeat now, is the fundamental basis of liberalism is in fact another God. It comes in all sorts of shades and colors. You know, you've got communism, you've got socialism, you've got Nazism, you've got fascism, you've got all those isms, but they all go back to Plato, who goes back to Egypt. And the basis of it is what's called Hermeticism. And I will read a paragraph from Wikipedia for you, that great theological and reliable source, Wikipedia. In fact, it's correct in this case. It states it nicely. Hermeticism influence was most pronounced in Gnostic traditions, which shared with Hermeticism an emphasis on esoteric knowledge being the key to salvation. Both movements taught that the soul's home was in the divine realm and that the material world was a place of exile. So the basis for all of this world is someplace where your soul is exiled. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to get out of here. And then you're trying to go up and ascend and be with God. That's the fundamental belief of it, and goes through Hegel, through Marx, through Rousseau, on and on and on. And it is basically the foundation of modern liberalism, although most people don't understand it. And the idea is, in order to be saved, you have to have special knowledge. Plato, for example, said only the most intelligent philosophers are going to be able to make it. In Marx, you have the elites who are going to lead everybody into this golden age, and they're going to keep ruling. And by the way, that's Plato again, where he divided the people into four classes. Gold were the philosophers. Silver were the warriors. And then bronze and iron were the farmers and the merchants and the craftsmen and those kinds of things. The only people to whom democracy applied were to gold and silver, not to everybody else down below. So this whole idea of democracy and everything else has to do with Hermeticism, which says that this is a place of exile that you're trying to get out of, and the only way you're going to be able to get out of that is some special knowledge that you got to figure out or has got to be figured out for you, and then you may be able to ascend, but most of you won't make it. And, oh, by the way, most of you don't get to vote either. The basis of this is satanic. And the thing to understand is Satan hates people. Satan hates God's creation. God, on the other hand, loves people. He says so. That was the whole point of the passage in Deuteronomy that we read today. I love you. I have this covenant that I've made with you because I love you. And at the very beginning of the creation, God said, oh, look what I've made. It is very good. Whereas Gnosticism says, no, this is a place of imprisonment. You don't want to be here. God says, I made you a garden. I put you in this beautiful place. I love you. That's the difference that we're talking about. And that's the dichotomy between God and all of the human isms that people have tried to make ever since, is they all flow from the idea that this is not a good place. Now, God has an explanation for why this place is difficult. It's difficult because of the choice that our ancestors made. I put them in this perfect garden. They didn't stay there. And oh, by the way, what was the thing that tempted them to leave the garden? Esoteric and special knowledge. If you eat of this tree, you're going to be like gods, knowing good and evil. So the lure, if you will, of Hermeticism, Gnosticism, philosophy, all of these kinds of things, is there's some special knowledge out there that if you just get that, you can be saved. That goes clear back to the garden. That's the first lie that Satan told. And you can tell, by the way, the difference between the works of God and the works of Satan. The works of God are beautiful. You were talking about all the beauty that you see around you in your prayers this morning. God makes things beautiful. Have you ever seen the architecture of the Soviet Union or East Germany before the fall of communism? Dull, gray, ugly, depressing. That's Satan. That is not God. And the fact that you have a whole society that goes into that shows that they are worshiping, they don't realize it, many of them, but they're worshiping another God. And that's a God who hates people, so he makes things ugly and depressing because he wants you spiritually depressed. Whereas God says, I love you. And, oh, by the way, all of these laws that I am giving you, it said explicitly in today's reading, these are for your good. I'm giving you these laws because I love you and they are for your good. It is not because I am some kind of a cosmic Karen who wants to take away all joy out of your life. That's not why I gave you those laws. I gave them to you so that you would thrive, that you would have a good society, that you would have a good life. I gave them to you because I love you. So God's way is actually simple. Not easy, simple. Satan's way is very complicated. You got to have all this special knowledge and you got to know the special handshake. How many secret societies are there that have special knowledge that you got to have a special handshake to get in and you ascend up through levels of knowledge? Anybody heard of societies like that? The Masons are like that. They're a Gnostic society. God doesn't do any of that. God says it's really simple. The way you get to see me and come to my presence is love me, love your neighbor. And all of the commandments, all 613 of them, are details on how you work that out. What does it mean to love your neighbor? And by the way, I've said this before and I'll repeat it now. In modern American usage, love has taken on the erotic dimension. So when people say love, they typically think of sex, which is fine. Sex is part of love. That's no problem. For your neighbor, perhaps a better word to use is care. Care for your neighbor as you would care for yourself. If you see a sheep walking down the street, round them up. You would want somebody to do that for you. So care for your neighbor as you would care for yourself. Doesn't mean that you have to get all gooey-eyed every time you look at your neighbor. And that's not what's being talked about, which is why I say care is perhaps a better term for the modern American ear. So salvation has not changed. It was given by God, and it's not changed. And there's a passage in Mark 10. Mark 10 and verse 17. As he was setting out on his journey, a man ran up and knelt before him and asked him, "Good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" Eternal question. The guy's a Jew. He wants to know what I have to do. And Yeshua said to him, "Why do you call me good? No one is good except God alone. You know the commandments. Do not murder. Do not commit adultery. Do not steal. Do not bear false witness. Do not defraud. Honor your father and your mother." And he said to him, "Teacher, all these things I have kept from my youth." And Yeshua looked at him and loved him. Ding, 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 ding. Loved him. And Yeshua looked at him and loved him and said to him, "You lack one thing. Go, Sell all that you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. And come, follow me. Disheartened by the saying, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. Now, first off, notice what Yeshua told him. Love your neighbor. In other words, sell your stuff, give it to your neighbor. Love your neighbor. And follow me. Love God. So the instructions are, love God, love your neighbor. Same as they are back in the Torah. No change. Now, we all have been conditioned to think that this guy was a greedy rascal that couldn't bear to give up all of his stuff. And that may be true. It may also be that this guy was a business owner and he had employees that depended upon him. And he had contracts that he had made and he had obligations that he had to take care of, so that if he just dropped everything and took off, he would have a whole bunch of people suddenly unemployed and without sustenance. It could be either way. The fact is he didn't do it, and Yeshua then says the eye of the camel business. But the point is, Yeshua gives exactly the same instructions that Moses gives. Love God, care for your neighbor. It hasn't changed. Satan says, this is all really complicated. It's really hard. There's all sorts of special stuff that you got to learn. And if you don't learn that and don't learn it just right, too bad, you just die. Now, the other thing that Sachs talked about, there's two things going on in the Torah and Deuteronomy especially. And he says love also appears all over the place in Genesis. Remember when I said love only appears twice in Exodus, twice in Leviticus, zero in Numbers, and 23 times in Deuteronomy? I didn't say anything about Genesis. There's all sorts of love in Genesis, but it is personal love between human beings. Jacob loved Rachel, didn't love Leah. So the love that Jacob had was not, in fact, unifying. It was dividing. Because what happened was he had strife within his family. He had all sorts of problems because he loved Rachel and didn't love Leah. But Leah gave him five children. And that turmoil, if you will, of one-sided love then ricochets all the way down to the sale of Joseph and the Egyptian slavery. So love, per se, is not enough. God talks about love and justice in the same breath. And the point there is, justice without love is harsh and bitter. Love without justice is mushy and has no standards. You have to have both of those going hand in hand in order to have a good society. And God talks about those things over and over and over again, and a lot of in Deuteronomy. And let me quote from Sachs. This is the final paragraph of his article. By the way, the name of the article is The Morality of Love. It's on Aish, this week's Torah portion. Love without justice leads to rivalry and eventually to hate. Justice without love is devoid of the humanizing forces of compassion and mercy. We need both. This unique ethical vision, the love of God for humans and of humans for God, translated into an ethic of love toward the neighbor and the stranger. This is the foundation of Western civilization and its abiding glory. It is born here in the book of Deuteronomy, the book of law as love and love as law. The thing about it is, this concept is unique to Judaism and Christianity. There is no other ancient society that came up with this. You had all sorts of different ways of organizing your society. So, for example, if you were in Northern Europe, you wanted to be a warrior. That was how you got to Valhalla. If you weren't a warrior and you didn't die bravely, in other words, if you weren't brave, if you weren't special, if you weren't better than everybody else, you're not going anywhere. So all of these other societies have ways of organizing, and these are not stupid people. But the point is, only the revelation of God to the Hebrew people resulted in this combination of law and love as the organizing principle for society. It is unique to humanity. No other people ever had it. And if you're living in this world, anybody living anywhere else? If you're living in this world, you know how difficult it can be. You know how bad things can get, etc. Now, if you don't have God, what you wind up doing is looking at it and listening to Satan and say, yeah, this is a prison. This is a terrible place. It's a prison. Unless I happen to be the king, it's good to be the king. But if you're not the king, it's pretty terrible. So you can see how a religion like Gnosticism or Hermeticism can get going, because what it does is it gives you a potential human way of working your way out of this. If you do all the secret things and learn the secret handshakes, you can get out of this place. And who doesn't want to do that? For example, in Tibet, they have this wheel, the circle of life. And the whole idea is you get reincarnated over and over and over again until you get it right. What's the goal? The goal is not to come back. It's to get off the circle. That's the goal of the religion, not to come back. And that bespeaks an attitude about this world. Every other society has got some human way of earning your way out of here. And it's not available to everybody. You got to be brave. You got to be a really good ascetic, and you got to do all the right things so you don't come back in reincarnation. Whatever it is, but it's all human works to get out of here. What God says is, no. You're making this way too hard. All you got to do is love me, which is to say, have a relationship with me and take care of each other. That's all it takes. Not easy, but really simple. Now, one of the things about humanity is everybody at some level understands that this is not all there is. And I'll quote from Ecclesiastes 3. I have seen the business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Remember, I said God makes things beautiful. Satan makes them ugly. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity into man's heart. Yet, so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. So the idea is God has wired into us this idea of eternity. In other words, this isn't all there is. But he hasn't wired it into us so that we all understand everything. The only way you understand things is by revelation or by the subtle words of Satan, who will lead you astray. So out there are people who have this sense of eternity in their heart, but they have been led astray by the slick words of Satan. And Satan is slick. He's very good. And the people like Plato and Marx and all these kind of guys are not stupid people. They're very bright, and they're very good with words, and they're very good with abstract terms. So if you look at the stuff that they write and they say, oh, that makes sense. Yes, it does. But it's wrong. And that's the whole point. You can't trust human reason. The only thing that you can ultimately trust is revelation from God. That's your foundation of truth. Now, from that foundation, human reason is a wonderful tool. I use it myself sometimes. But without that foundation to stand on, human reason will lead you off into slavery and death. So, as you go out and talk to people, recognize that you're talking to somebody who does, at some level, have a sense of eternity. And if he is not a believer in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, he's also lost as a goose and probably doesn't realize it. That's the challenge. And it isn't easy. It is not easy. The problem with the United States is we are soaked in Christian buzzwords. Culture is inherited from Christianity. And so people hear these Christian buzzwords that everybody says, and they, just a Bible thumper. So it's difficult. I'm not suggesting it's not, but it's not impossible. And certainly it's possible if you get off your blessed assurance and communicate. So go out and rescue these poor souls that are lost as goose.